What advice do you have for an introverted artist who dreads talking to strangers or just going to networking events?
Have a really good online presence and strategy. You do not have to put your face on camera. You do not have to speak on camera. You don't have to do any of that. Have a really good online presence. Understand LinkedIn and the ins and outs. Understand how to educate on LinkedIn, and also understand hashtags.
Hello, everyone. It is your host, Todd Dotson, here on another exciting episode of 23 Journeys, a network for creatives, with my co-host, Naomi Dotson. How are you?
Hey, everybody.
Awesome. So today we have an awesome guest. She is the networking concierge. Hey, what is a networking concierge? It's a very intriguing thing, right, Ashley?
It is.
Meet Ashley Owens, everyone.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here all the way from Texas.
Yeah, I know. Scooting away from Texas, I definitely miss the Southern hospitality coming into Philly on the way in. But I definitely don't miss a lot of Texas, but I absolutely love Philadelphia. I miss being here for sure.
Yeah. Well, this is where we originally met. You know, you're originally from this area, and then you've traveled, and now you live, like I said, in Texas and everything.
Yeah.
Has that like changed? How's it feel like networking in the different areas?
Dude, it's hard. It's harder. One of the best things, though, about Texas is that there's a lot of business associations and things that you can be a part of, very much like it is in Philadelphia. But yeah, that was a kind of a shock for me, building out a network out in Texas. One thing I did notice, though, is that the women and the men that I were meeting, a lot of them are in like roofing, and they're in just housing, realtors, all that stuff. So I didn't really meet a ton of like true entrepreneurs that were starting like, you know, a video company or photography company and those kind of creatives. You really had to seek them out in different areas. Like South by Southwest goes to Austin, so you go out there and meet a ton of creatives out there. But in Plano, Texas, you really have to kind of seek it out. Otherwise, you've got a lot of people who work together, like a lot of family businesses. Mm. And so there really isn't a ton of individuality that I've had the privilege of being able to kind of really get involved in with them. So, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well,
so
I miss it being here. Miss being in Philly.
Except for the cold weather, right?
It's chilly. I want to go home. This is BS. Can't do it.
And then, can you tell our audience a little bit more about you and then what is a networking concierge?
It's something I made up at in 2017 over a cup of coffee and maybe a meltdown. We're not really sure. But networking concierge is basically the white glove service to your how to build your network. So I had the privilege of starting this in 2017. And the reason why I did that is because I saw that there was a need for a lot of the people in my professional network who really didn't know where to go, who to talk to, and what to say. And so I knew how to do those things based off of my excitement about getting to know somebody and my natural curiosity of what makes that person tick. I've always had that since I was a kid. And so I built the business off of a need. Where it really came from is I left my job. Well, I've had 23 jobs after I graduated college. Let's start with that. It was mergers, acquisitions, budget cuts. I was a celebrity personal assistant. I used to work in casting, and then I worked at eBay Enterprise. So did a ton of different jobs here and there, and I could do one thing, which is I can talk intelligently to different industries. And I saw that as a superpower after I had my second meltdown. But I think the benefit of that was is that I knew that I could do something with professionals in my space because I could then introduce them to the other people by thinking outside the box. And so after I left my last job, I was selling custom software. I'm like, how the heck did I get here? I went to a networking event and I walked around and I just started asking the question, what sucks for you about networking?
Yeah.
And they told me, well, I don't know who to reach out to. I don't know who to, you know, where to go. I don't know who to talk to. And I said, well, I can help you figure that out. And somebody overheard me and said, hey, would you ever network for somebody at a book signing? And I said, sure. So he's like, okay, I've got an event in 2 weeks. Just let me know what you've got in 2 weeks. So in 2 weeks, I had a business plan. I had a website. I had headshots. I had business cards and a semblance of service offerings that I made up. And I think at the end of the day, I think I was maybe like 7 pennies or rubles that I gave this invoice to. And he said, okay, well, this is in State College. I'm like, great. So for those of you who don't know where State College is, if you're listening all over the world, It is 4 hours away from my location at the time. So I drove 4 hours, did a 2-hour event, drove 4 hours back, and then the world opened up. I introduced him to people that he couldn't be introduced to while he was there. And so that's where it all kind of started.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that gentleman's name is Marty McDonald. And Marty has then since introduced me to Chris, who is now my employer. Awesome. So Marty has changed my life twice.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you, Marty.
Yep.
The now, you were creatives, you know?
Yeah.
We're photographers, we're videographers, we're musicians, we're actors, we're writers and such. What's how do you feel we should approach networking?
Take away everything you think about networking and apply it to how am I going to make a friend that I can tolerate during this gig I'm working on? And the reason why I say that is because you're already going to naturally be creative to another creative because, you know, subject matter experts know subject matter experts.
Yeah.
And so the best way to network is literally on the job. So if you're talking to a lighting guy, if you're talking to the soundboard guy, if you're talking to I know that you work in weddings, the event planner, anybody that has decision-making power, somehow get to know them personally first. And then conversations will start to mesh and to mold and to get very excited, and it allows you to then continue the conversation if there is help that's needed. But networking is not just a transactional thing. It has everything to do with how you incorporate your services and your value to somebody else in some way, whether it's resources, tools, advice, anything like that. So I think most people who go into any kind of networking situation, especially if they're creatives, it's don't hide behind your camera. Don't think about that you have to come out closing a deal, but you definitely want to make a really good connection and you want to follow up with that connection.
Okay. All right. And then a lot of creatives are introverts.
Yeah.
All right.
Like me.
Yeah. We love it. All my clients are introverts. It's fantastic.
And, you know, typically networking settings would scare.
Oh, yeah.
Someone like that.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for an introverted artist who dreads talking to strangers or just going to networking events?
Have a really good online presence and strategy. You do not have to put your face on camera. You do not have to speak on camera. You don't have to do any of that. Have a really good online presence. Understand LinkedIn and the ins and outs. Understand how to educate on LinkedIn, and also understand hashtags. Because the benefit of that, if you can showcase your value without boasting or, you know, anything that's ego-driven, and you educate yourself in that, then you can then go out and try to schedule one-on-ones with other individuals who are just as cool as you are. So the beginning of my business, I was trying to figure out who to connect with and everything, but I did a lot of online networking by reaching out to somebody who I thought was in a really interesting position. And I said, hey, do you have 15 minutes for an informational conversation? I'd love to get to know you better. Anybody that I had, the privilege of reaching out, or anybody I had the privilege of connecting with on LinkedIn, I'd always send the same message. I'd love 15 minutes to get to know you better. That's how I built my network. Was genuinely just anybody that commented, said something nice in my post because I try to educate, I would always reach out for a 15-minute information session.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's
that one-on-one is way less scary than going into a chamber event and being like, who am I going to talk to? Because it's always realtors that come up to you. Always. Need a house? No. Brenda, I'm good.
Realtors and bankers.
That's funny, too, because you're in the industry, too, of real estate on the one yeah. side. So it's like some of the events you go to is just all realtors because that's your clientele then at some point, too. So it's funny.
You will always have a house ready to go if you ever need it.
Yeah.
Good old Brenda.
Oh, man. So we did talk about the you being from the Philadelphia area.
Yeah.
Now you're in Texas and such. All right. And then the geographical differences, like what do you find different in, like, I guess, say the how people act or the networking approach?
So it's interesting. I think when I first got to Dallas, I was so used to people in Philly, like networking with people in Philly, and it was common knowledge that that's what you were doing. So it wasn't hard for people to come up to you in Philly and just get to know you. And it's like, hey, how are you? I haven't met you before. It wasn't a weird or uncomfortable kind of thing. And everyone had kind of their pitch down, but weren't really pitching. And if they were, they were on by themselves. Like everyone kind of knew that you were full of it. And we kind of excluded them because they weren't told that was wrong.
Right.
And then in Dallas, it everyone's super friendly. And you really have to kind of coax out of them what they do, because their lives aren't completely surrounded by their work ethic. They're surrounded by their family, their homes. Again, cost of living is so much better in Dallas, to be honest. And so people have lives, like true lives, outside of
their business.
Their businesses. And so it allows you to really kind of see the difference if everyone's a little bit slow. And I'm not saying slow as in like slow. I'm saying as in like
they're not in a rush.
They're not in a rush. And they're not trying. It's not transactional. I'm not saying Philly was transactional, but there's a cadence. There's a speed into which you get a chance to really engulf yourself into somebody's life and in Philly. And I loved that part of it. But Texas, you really – the work doesn't come first in Texas. And that was hard for me to kind of shift because I was so used to being like, tell me more about what you do. And they're like, I just work for my husband. Cool. What does that mean? Just work for my husband. I'm like, okay, great, which is great. And then on the other end of it, it's like, yeah, I run, you know, a $15 million – roofing company. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. He's like, yeah, tired. Like, that's how'd you get there, Bob? Like, tell me more. And so it's kind of like when you go to an event in Philly, you know you're there to network. When you go to an event in Dallas, you're there to socialize.
Right.
And so I was doing a mix of both when I was in Philly, a little bit more on the ratio of the networking of like, ooh, you want to talk to this person. I want to introduce you to that person because I just get excited about that. And in Dallas, you really kind of have to massage it out of people before you can make an introduction.
So do you think that, I guess with Dallas, the more Texas vibe is like you said, you want to build that friendship mm-hmm. or that relationship first and stuff. Do you feel like, even though in Philly you can be like kind of more direct, do you feel like that more like, hey, let's build that friendship or that personal touch first is more valuable?
I've always done the personal touch first when I was in Philly, but I don't think that it was as let's go back. Yes, I think the personal touch is way more prominent in Dallas as like a first get to know you session, even in a professional environment. In Philadelphia, everywhere you go, it's like, oh, you got to talk to this person. I guess that's also my brain because I wanted to provide value in some way and also wanted to make sure people knew that, hey, I'm here to help with whatever you need. And nobody really asks me for my time as much in Dallas as they did in Philly. And I think because I slowed down and I kind of pulled myself back from saying yes to everything. So I think that there is a level of, again, people just don't focus solely on their careers as much in Texas as they do on the East Coast.
Okay. All right.
It was strange for me too. Like now I got to make friends, which is tough.
Well, I've traveled to California.
Yeah.
And I've been to L.A. and stuff. And the vibe definitely was totally different. Like over here in the East Coast, it's just like, bang, 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 hustle, bustle. Went to L.A. It was just like, yeah, man, we on L.A. time, man. You know, it was cool. Like they got stuff done, but it just wasn't as like here to Philly, New York and stuff. We're all just like, cool, we got to get that done right there. 5 o'clock on the dot. Like over there, it's like it could be like 5:30. It could be like 6, you know.
Which I think when we're completely swamped and everything, I think that's when we're wishing we're in those areas where it's like you can just slow down a little bit and everything, because that's what leads to burnout too, is when we're constantly go, 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 go and everything. And then you're like, I need a break and everything. So
the burnout is definitely real. But there's something to be said about somebody who can get it done. And I think maybe it's an East Coast and we're talking about being from the East Coast, but I think it's also just the level of standard that you have for yourself, which is you're going to do it well, slow is smooth and smooth is fast, right? You're going to do the job well. You're going to prep. You're going to do everything that you need to get done. And there's a level of respect that you have with the people that you're working with to not waste their time. And I think time has a very different meaning in Philly than it does in Dallas or like to your point on in California too.
Okay. All right. So for creatives, when juggling networking, you know, can be tough because, you know, we have, you know, multiple lives, you know, personal lives and everything. And sometimes for creatives, we may not be full time in what we're doing, you know, at the time. So how do you advise someone who says they don't have time to network because they're too busy, whether managing gigs, honing their craft, working a second job? Are there efficient ways to integrate networking into the creative routine without sacrificing, you know, perfecting their craft.
Absolutely. Just allocate an hour in the morning to go through LinkedIn and comment thoughtfully on somebody's post that's relevant to your industry. Just do the $80 method from Gary Vee. He talks about it, doing it on LinkedIn. You can do it on Instagram. For those of you who don't know, the $80 method is following the top 10 hashtags that are relevant to your industry on LinkedIn, because LinkedIn is where to go to meet with other professionals who can hire you. And then comment thoughtfully on those trending posts. And then anytime that somebody reaches out or connects or something like that, schedule a meeting. And that way you do that in the morning, 15 minutes before you get in the shower, you're good to go, because the continuous and the consistency allows you to be more prominent in the space. And people will start to see what you're working on, what you're doing. Or take a Saturday and post a ton of content, and then in the morning, check your messages, see if you can schedule some meetings, and allocate 2 hours out of the week to sit down and just meet somebody new. And do that on a Friday morning from 9 to 11. You're good to go. But if the networking doesn't have to be in person, but the activity of being able to collaborate, connect, and be consistent with somebody is incredibly important. And that's a networking activity for sure.
Okay. All right. Now, after a person initially sets up a meeting or a collaboration, mm-hmm. what do you say are great follow-up practices that a professional could do?
Oh, great. So I cheat now in the best way. So I, obviously I'm a talker, clearly I'm on the podcast now, but I use AI to record conversations and then also to make sure to be very concise about what my follow-ups are. So if I'm having a meeting with somebody, I want to get to know them better, I'm asking a bunch of different questions. One, somebody picks up the phone to call you, what problem are they having? So I understand who they're looking to either meet or what problem that they solve. What kind of individuals are they looking to meet? And then going through my own list and kind of if I name them off in the conversation, I'm going to forget within 2 hours. So I use AI to kind of capture all that, especially if I'm spitting out ideas and things. That's where I'm at my best, where I can support the most. When I'm triggered on something that allows me to give them a resource, or reminds me to give them the resource. So I use otter.ai is my favorite, and I use that to capture, and then I send a follow-up email of all of my follow-ups afterwards. But the best thing is, again, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. Just don't delay it. So if you've got introductions to make or you've got follow-ups to make, always leave with some kind of call to action after every single conversation. Even if it's like, hey, you know what, I really like to do this again in a month. Or what events are you going to? Would love to go if you're open to having a guest, and just figure out ways on the call how to collaborate, because that gives you a reason to follow up.
Okay. All right. And then I set up a software again?
Oh, otter.ai, OTTER.ai. And so you can actually sync it up into Zoom, and it captures your transcript and then it puts it into note form.
Awesome.
It's my favorite. It's the best.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I mean, AI is definitely it's going to help us in so many different ways. You know, and a lot of people are afraid that it may replace us mm-hmm. in some aspects and stuff.
Definitely replaces my brain on certain things I don't want to do.
Yeah, I love ChatGTP. And then I've seen, what was it called? It was another software that does the same thing that mm-hmm. Otter does, where you record the Zoom
yep.
and then it does the whole transcript and everything and such. And that one's super helpful.
It's helpful. It's also, it keeps you accountable too. You know, especially when you're trying to connect and then you have to write it down, and people who are more visual and they are audible and all that. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. And then with many people who struggle in staying in touch, you know, how could a creative keep a connection warm over time without seeming that they're trying to be pushy or more or less, pushy or opportunistic?
Sure. So if you're it all depends on how you frame it and how the connection is being made in the first place. So if you and I are like, so for example, you and I are hanging out right now with your lovely wife. We love her. And it was, hey, I'm going to be in town. You know, you've got something coming up. You and I think maybe spoke once or twice before, but I ended up coming and speaking to your group. We kept in touch. And then you said, hey, I would love to offer you to come into to do the podcast when you're in town. Awesome. Fantastic. But we didn't really need a lot of conversation for us to maintain that professionalism and that friendship, because we both knew that there is a mutually beneficial opportunity. We're both going to take it because we value and respect each other.
Right.
And so depending on how that relationship is with the people that you have the privilege of meeting, it really depends on if you're going to need them in the future, if you're building that relationship for a reason, or sometimes you just want to be around that person and just say, hey, you've got some really cool stuff going on. Can I hang out? And so I think the biggest thing is always keep track of the people that you know that you want to continue maintaining a relationship with by following them on LinkedIn, by messaging them. That's a networking activity. But then also celebrate them. If they've got something that's coming up and something that is exciting in their lives, like send them a text, send them a message and say, I see what you're doing. This is awesome. Would love to see if there's something I can participate in and help you out with. And so the goal is that if you can be a cheerleader from the sidelines and in that person's life, then the collaboration is going to happen. I mean, that's what happened with us recently, right?
Yeah.
So I ended up hiring him to come and, you know, help me with an event tomorrow based off of just, hey, are you available?
Yeah.
So worked out.
I mean, worked out, perfect timing. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, everything that we originally discussed was just like, hey, let's get on the show. Let's have some fun and chat. And
dude, I drove an hour. I don't mind. I'm hanging out. Like, I got nothing. Like, why not? That doesn't, my time is valuable, but I'm making phone calls in the car. I wanted to do this, not because, I mean, I'm being recorded and my hair looks great, but
but and because, you just got off an airplane too. So
oh,
that's
yeah,
fantastic.
I'm sweaty. It's a whole thing. I did shower. You're welcome. But but I think that there's a benefit of this is not hurting me. This is not hurting you. This is not taking time out of my day that I already didn't have. And if I didn't think that the vibes were good, then there's no way I would come all this way out in a wooded area that you sent me on Google Maps. It scared me a little bit. And to sit down and do this because, you know, if you want to continue to connect, you know that people have got to trust their gut with that stuff. So
yeah.
Yeah.
And you actually said something that has been a pain point in me for a while is people respecting your time. And stuff. And it's like one of my things, I'm a busy person. Mm-hmm. You're a busy person. And it's like, I think a lot of people miss the importance of, like, even though we are creatives, you're also running a business.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's hard to do both. Yeah.
And when you're running a business, you got to keep track of money. You got to keep track of time and stuff. And, you know, if you're going to do something, make sure you commit to it, you know, mm-hmm. make sure you're backing up whatever you're saying and stuff too. So that way it's just like, you know, I said like, hey, I want you to come on the podcast and, you know, this and that. And I would periodically give you updates like, here's how the set's looking everything else like that. Just so you know, it's legit. We're not just like, you know.
I cannot tell you how, like, you're so right because it got me more and more excited and more like, I am doing this. Like, the standard is the standard. I am saying yes. I am doing what I say I'm going to be doing. And, oh, this is awesome. You show me pictures of his new studio. Yeah, man, I would love to support you. What a privilege it is to be invited. You found value in what I had to say, which is all I do for a living, is just talk to people all the time. And what a privilege it was to be able to say, yeah, man, I would love to take my time and come out here and support you in any way, shape, and form. So absolutely, let's do it. And if it's mutually beneficial. Like, I get a chance to learn more about you, learn about my beautiful wife, and then see if I can help you in the future, because there's always going to be a need for people to be introduced to somebody who has a skill set.
Yeah.
And the value that I provide is being able to have that list and say, let me match you up with X, Y, and Z. Let me match you up with this person. And so it just makes my job a lot easier to maintain if I have the right people who are needed.
And the and you just said another thing is like getting people matched up.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think that when you network, it's all about like, okay, well, what's this person going to get me right now?
Gross.
You know?
Trash.
Yeah.
Trash.
Real networking comes from understanding it's a long game, you know?
I also don't care what you do.
Yeah.
I don't care. Nobody cares. Nobody cares what you do for a living. Nobody cares. What they care about is how you made them feel. That's it. At the end of the day. And can you fix a problem for them?
Yeah.
That's it.
Right.
So I don't need to know the ins and outs of your financial broness or what Bitcoin is. Like, get out of my face, Kevin. Like, what I want to know is, hey, man, like, what do you got going on that's a big project that you want to do? And if your eyes light up and your body gets moving and you're just excited about talking about this project, that is going to give me every bit of ammo that I have and I have in my back pocket to say, let me see how I can get you there. And I need nothing from you, but one introduction and one email takes 4 minutes. That's it. And then you take it from there. And then you keep me posted. But you can change people's lives without even realizing it by making the right connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they'll remember those connections and stuff like that. How you just said about the first person that brought you on and everything in the very beginning and all. So it's like you remember those little touches. It's all about, like you said, how you feel and everything in that moment. And then they're going to stand out to you. They might not even be the best in their craft, but you remember them and everything.
And when you match people up, to your point, when you match people up by personality first and then skill, well, you filter through skill, like what they're looking for, then you match by personality, you're going to win every time. And that is power. If you are the person that people go to that trust you to make an introduction, to help them with a problem, you are very powerful. I'm not calling myself powerful because I don't have enough hours to call myself the subject matter expert in this field. I still have about, I think, 6 or 7 years before I can be an SME, realistically. But what I can tell you is that there are many, many instances where I've had the privilege of meeting wonderful humans and then being able to say, I'm going to trust my gut on this one. I think you two should meet. I think three people that I've made introductions to have all started businesses together. And that was based off of not necessarily, I don't know if you can solve their problem, but there's something here. Let me make the connection. And I have never been wrong. And so understanding the fact that I can do that it's I'm not saying it's not a gift because it's probably ADHD, to be honest, because I can,
ADHD.
For sure. It's probably because I can capture patterns a lot faster. But I think that there is a level of gratefulness about there's a level of excitement that I have about making those connections because I need nothing from them. I don't want anything from them. Just I want to go do your thing. Let me know how it goes.
Yeah.
If I'm a part of it, just a little bit. Oh, amazing.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
The you have mentioned before that you used to work in casting, right?
I did. I used to work for I used to work casting for actors, models, TV, print, and runway.
Print and runway.
Blech.
What is, since that's an area of your expertise, what kind of direction would you give for someone in those kind of fields? Like, how could you advise them to get in front of like a casting director or producer or director?
Extra work. Just do a bunch of extra work. Grant Wolfley Casting does a ton of extra work where you can just be on their list, going to local model and talent agencies and just being put on their extra list. That, I mean, I interned at a casting agency and then I would help. And then when they needed to fill in time, I went on set. So I've been on like 12 movies in the background, just hanging out and made friends with all of the PAs, made friends with all of the lighting guys, made friends with just because we were bored. And I had no idea that was networking. I didn't know that's what you were doing. At 19, 20 years old, I had no idea what any of that was. My first networking event was at a meetup for actors that my acting coach brought me to. And I was like, what's networking? What is that? I don't know. I'm just, what do you talk to people about? And they introduced me. I was like, oh, this is just a gathering of people talking about how cool they are. And I was like, I could do that, but I'm not cool enough yet. But it was just, it was such a good introduction to just to networking in general, because when you're a creative, it's who you know.
Yeah.
And that I was met with kindness in that space. And I don't think many people are met with kindness at a networking event, especially a very seriously professional one, if they don't think that they are of value enough, which is makes me sad.
Were you able to ever like help other actors and such? Like,
I haven't had the privilege yet.
No, you haven't had
I haven't had the privilege. I think that I've been removed from that industry for a long time, that I would wanted to do a little bit more research into certain specific resources and associations and groups and events and things to really give sound advice. But I think that there is a level of you yourself are a brand and you yourself are a business. And sometimes actors rely more on their agent and on their manager to be able to do that for them.
Yeah.
And now with TikTok and now with Instagram and all the social media platforms, you kind of have to build your own stage. You have to build your own shows. And so you can't just be an actor. You have to be a producer. You got to be a photographer. You got to be able to edit your own stuff or at least be in a collaborative space where you can outsource that stuff. But
Yeah, because there's a lot of creatives. I mean, Vine, when that app was around, I mean, you got so many people who are now in movies and TV shows and everything like that. They just started with those seven-second videos. Yep. And it was just, you know, they filmed it on their phone and, you know, edit it and put it out and boom. And that got them out there and such. Like with working with creatives, like, you know, obviously you have like me and like, you know, maybe some other musicians or anything else like that. Do you have any success stories of people that you know that you can recall?
I do. There's a list of 5 people that I have written on a whiteboard in my office. And anytime I'm having my own imposter syndrome or I'm having a rough day, or I'm just not operating at the level that I want to operate on, I look at that list and they have all told me repeatedly, and I write this list down because it's important to me, that at some point I have either said something to them, done something for them, or helped them in some way that have changed their life. And I'm not going to go into details of who's on that list except for one because he's also an actor. It was one of those moments where if everything were to explode and completely go down the drain, it doesn't matter because I helped those five people.
Right.
Even if it was just one name. But it was five that I keep on my list. So it doesn't matter.
Were you able to share that one story?
Yeah. So my wonderful friend, I'm going to name him out because he's lovely and wonderful. His name is Alex Kaplan. And Alex Kaplan runs an organization called Of Substance. It's a nonprofit. And Of Substance, he was an addict and he is sober now. And he made, you'll love his stuff, actually.
Now that you said Of Substance, I've seen his stuff on social media. Yep.
Yeah. So he does Netflix-worthy films about addiction in all of its forms, how it means to be the girlfriend of somebody who has an addiction. He does incredible work. It came from a dinner we had, and he and I were just chit-chatting, and he's like, I got this idea. And I said, why don't you make it a nonprofit to help these people? And that's what he did. And so he goes, that helped him get sober, that saved his life, that saved his relationships. I believe, I could be mistaken on some of these items, but it was enough where I don't want Alex to see this and be like, you didn't save my relationship. Katie and I were fine. So I misspoke there. Love you, Katie. But I think they have a beautiful son now. It's amazing. There is a level of, he repeatedly tells me every time that we get on a phone call, and I cry every single time, he goes, you have changed my life. He goes, every time I talk to you, I think differently, I feel differently, and it came from that conversation that we had. And I would take him to events. I would I would help him. I would be there with him at these conferences, at these networking events, and just, he's an actor. He's going to watch and he's going to mimic and he's going to mime. So instead of me telling him what to do, I said, just come with me and you do you. And he was fine. And he's still brilliant. So, that would be my success story with Alex. He's wonderful.
I love it. I love that.
I miss him. I should call him. I'm on FaceTime. Talk about you, buddy.
Get a nice cry out.
Your car ride back.
I got to call him.
He'll be like, hey, what you been up to? I was talking about you on a podcast.
I was crying in a podcast. Oh, I miss you, buddy.
That's great. Yeah. So you've networked for some pretty high profile clients and such.
Sure.
And companies over the years.
Yeah.
How do you feel is their approach different for networking versus for like Fortune 500 type of client to like, you know, regular like entrepreneurs?
Yeah.
And stuff?
So people are people, right? At the end of the day, the only change is the only change is how you prep for the event. So let's say tomorrow I'm going to a women's event. I know the majority of the people that are there, but then also I get the privilege of meeting new individuals. So my way of attack, I don't need anything from anybody there. I get a chance to be there, again, as a privilege, to just talk about different networking tactics and things like that. But then I've got two girlfriends that are coming that need my help with something. So they say, can we meet? I said, absolutely. So the difference would be, is that I am not going in with a full plan of how to network while I'm there. I'm there to catch up with old networking people, and then I get a chance to meet new individuals and see how I can support them in some way. For a conference, I have to look at all of the speakers that are going to be there. I have to go to look at all of the vendors, because my plan of attack is not, okay, I'm going to try to sell a sponsor for X, Y, and Z. I'm trying to engage in a good relationship with these sponsors to then be able to say, hey, if you like this conference, you might like ours. And since we're also vendor, like, it ends up being a different conversation rather than me going to an event where I know some people there and I don't need anything from them.
Yeah.
So the preparation's way different for a conference than it is for a networking event of this size. And then the tension is not so high. So I have an ROI that I have to hit at a conference because there's a lot of money going there. But the ROI is touch points. So reaching out to the clients that are there, reaching out to past speakers at our conference that are there. Like, it is continuously being in the face of the people that we want to be in the face of. And then with my networking at smaller events, it's getting to know as many people as I can and see how I can support them. So,
okay.
Yeah. But there's a lot more prep that goes in conferences. Yeah.
Yeah. So more prep, the bigger the event, yep. More preparation you want to do.
Like, I'm going to Vegas in April. And Vegas, that particular conference is about 1,500 people. And we know a lot of people that are there. And I get pulled in a ton of different directions because our conference last year was pretty successful. So it's being able to manage my time and my bandwidth. When you're working at a conference, you're going for 12, 14, 15 hours, especially if some of the people in your network want to drink, want to eat, want to go out and do and build up those relationships. So you're working from 7 a.m. to about sometimes 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't drink anymore. So not that I ever had a problem because I'm good. It's more of like my tummy is like, no, maybe you should not. And I also need to be ready to go the next day. Spry, being able to answer questions, especially if you have a booth. And so there's a lot more prep that goes into the bigger places.
Okay. All right. And then with that prep and stuff like that, say, for instance, you're networking with more masterminds or business owners and stuff like that. Like, and when I say business owners, I mean, like, you know, Fortune 500 business owners and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have to, like, you still treat them basically the same way you would if it was just, you know.
An entrepreneur I'd be more, and I'm saying this for a lack of a better term, more bro-y with an entrepreneur because we both share the same problems, right? Because we're of that size. For a bigger company, they don't give a hoot who I am. But I get a chance to really engage with who they are. So my questions are way more personal based, meaning like, you know, tell me more about, you know, where you live. Tell me more about, you know, did you like this conference you went to? So it's more of asking them questions because they're never going to ask me questions. Fortune 500 people, unless they are wealthy, not rich, but wealthy, they won't ask you questions about yourself unless they're very interested. So you have to capture their attention in a very different way. And you can't just come at them like, oh, what's going on? How are you doing? What's going on? You know, what makes you awesome? Like, I'm not going to do that. But with an entrepreneur, I can say, hey, man, how's it going today? I can't do that to a personal injury attorney that comes up. Like, hey, how are you? Nice to meet you. My name's Ashley. How can I support you today?
Yeah.
And so it's a little bit more of a customer service role. But otherwise, it's a different hat that you put on. That's all.
Okay. So like, say, for instance, an actor or say, for instance, a musician wants to meet with like a big music producer, music executive and stuff.
So, you were doing the research on that personality type of that director. You're finding any interviews of that person or any kind of articles that you can find so you can understand sensory modalities. You know what sensory modalities
are? No, what is that?
Sensory modalities are understanding how this person will receive information. So sensory modalities are you more audible? Are you visual? Are you kinesthetic? Are you auditory? Audible. Auditory. Good morning. It's been a day. Auditory, visual, auditory, digital, and then something else. Anyway. Oh, kinesthetic.
Kinesthetic, yeah.
So, yeah. So do you, so for example, if I say to you, I really feel like you've got a lot going on. How are you doing? Right? I'm more kinesthetic. If the person says, oh, I see what you're saying. Cool. They're more visual. I hear what you mean. You know, they're more auditory. And say, I really think that this is the direction that we go. They're more auditory digital. So if you can understand how they make, how they speak and how they receive information, then when you communicate with them, you can use those terms and you can, and it creates an unconscious commonality. So if I think that you are more, let's say, auditory digital, I'm going to use words like think, more logic-based questions. So when you do reach out to that person that you're trying to impress or trying to engage with, you have to meet them where they're at. So understanding their any kind of personality type that you think that they might be, or at least looking it up or using ChatGPT to figure it out, the goal is come in prepped with what you think they might want to hear that has based off of how they interpret information.
Right, and not coming in on a grovelly like oh, like you're so amazing. Just like more like like treat them like you're like equals. Like, I mean, obviously they're in a position of power, but like you want to come with a respect. Kind
when
of.
I tell you, so I was a handler for David Spade when he came to PIMCON, which is the conference that I run in October for it's called the Personal Injury Mastermind Conference. I used to work for a celebrities in New York, and so all I did was talk to him like an assistant would. And what I mean by that is it was very much like, hey, how can I support you today? My name is Ashley Owens. I'm the president of PIMCON. I'm here to make sure that you are I'm here to make you famous today. And it's David Spade. And so I knew that his soft, dry humor would have found that endearing because I've watched all of his stuff growing up. So I went at it. I took a risk, cracked a joke. He giggled, and then he only wanted me around him because he felt comfortable. He didn't feel like people were fawning over him. And I made sure that when we did the meet and greets that I would prep him on who was coming over in general right before they went up like an assistant would. And he felt like he could rely on me in those moments. But I did that intentionally, but I wasn't, you know, I love David Spade. I'm a huge fan. Was I going to freak out? No, I was going to do that in the bathroom. And then I was going to come back in and try to, you know, keep it together. But when you act cool, but professional and very attentive, everyone, their guards are down because they automatically feel like you're going to take care of them. And not in like a weird way, but like, hey, I've got you covered. Like he could, it's called speed to trust. And if I can say I'm good at anything, which is not many things, speed to trust I'm very, very good at. And so with anybody of that high caliber, I usually am able to get them within between 2 and 4 minutes of them feeling like, oh, I really like this conversation from you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm over here thinking, I'm like, wait, do I say, I see you, I hear you?
Yeah.
Like, I'm over here like trying to think, wait, what do I do and stuff and all. Like, I didn't even, because now that you said that, I'm like, thinking of all these people, well, now I just said think, but like of all these different people that I meet, and they're like, I see what you're saying, or I hear what you're saying, and I'm like, wow, they are totally different responses.
And if you repeat back to them what they said in the way that they said it, you are their best friend. It's an unconscious thing. I took neuro-linguistic programming. I got certified in it. Do I practice it? No. Do I grab some things from my trainings? Yes. It was the best certification I ever took because it really helped me understand myself. And then it created these certain things that you can do with people to create. And it's not manipulation. It is mimicking and mirroring is actually a compliment because you're trying to make that person feel comfortable. And most people don't catch it because they're usually just doing their own thing, which is fine. Totally fine. But when somebody catches that's what you're doing to each person, like, it's a very nice compliment because you're actively trying to make them feel comfortable.
That's awesome.
I once had a guy. Tell the story real quick. He's so young. He's like 22, 24. He must have read something. And he just came up to me like this. I don't know if you guys can see it, but that's like the, can we see it in the camera?
Yeah, that one.
That one?
Yep.
It looks like, it's like the power move that that all of the politicians use. And I took my hand and went, get that out of here, you toddler. I'm like, stop trying. Because what he was trying to do is he was trying to be not in control, but show us a view of power. And I'm like, you're 19. Get out of my face. Like, I have seen the world. Like, I will steamroll through you in a hot minute. What's a 401k? Like, tell me that.
Oh, that's beautiful. The, so we talked about networking with high profile people and stuff. What about if a person wants to find a mentor, and stuff? Like, what's the way that they should approach that asset?
You know, I've been asked this question before. It's a really good one. But I'm going to give you the answer that I can only come from experience. Mentors to me kind of fall into your lap rather than you going out to seek it. Because if you call somebody a mentor, it's because most mentors don't know they're mentors unless they have that straight up conversation of like, I'm going to pay you to be my mentor. Well, that's called a consultant. And, you know, a mentor is somebody who takes the time to work with you, not only for free, but has your best interest in mind. And a mentor to me is somebody that doesn't know that they're a mentor. So I've got two buddies of mine. One's Chris Joyce and the other one is Mark Sandler. Shout out to you guys. They don't know this. They don't know that they're the mentors of mine. But if I have a really big issue or something that I'm freaking out about or need them to just kill all the fluff, I call them up and say, I've got an idea or I need your help. And they without question, both of them pick up the phone and say, hey, how are you? Let's get into it. I could not talk to them for 3 or 4 months, but we like each other's stuff. We're on top of it. But they're people that have not only my best interest involved, but see me more than I see myself. And they've never told me that to my face. They've always just done the thing that makes me believe that. And they've always said the things to me that have really made me think differently without them worrying about hurting my feelings. And a mentor to me is, again, everybody defines mentor differently, but a mentor to me is somebody that if they ask me to fly out, I would say, okay. Like, there's no, I don't need to know the reason. I'll drop everything and come out. And they would do the same for me. So those to me are mentors.
Awesome. The, because you have those relationships, how would you advise creatives to make sure you nurture those relationships? Like, you should they do coffees or just do the social media or a little mix? Like, what would you say the approach?
It's definitely a mix. I think you're making a friend. Maybe women are a little bit better at making friends than dudes are, just because guys are typically more logical. I'm not saying that's bad or not. I'm just saying that there is a level of relationship that women make that are a little bit more aggressive.
Well, women make women are great at making communities.
Right, right. But men aren't bad at it. It's just, it's not the first thing they think about. Like, you know, me and Naomi are very much, you know, I'm going to be a restaurant now. I'm so excited. But she doesn't know this. But like, I would, the first thing I thought after I met her, I was like, hey girl, do you want to come to this event tomorrow? We'd love to have you there. And I thought of three people I wanted to make an introduction to. And so my brain goes immediately into, let me bring her into my circle, because now I, you know, I trust you. We're having a great time. There's a great vibe here. Let me see how I can, I think this would be beneficial. And she owes me nothing and I owe her nothing. And it just ends up being, that's the first thing I think of. And then when you make a friend, it shouldn't be dependent on what they can give you. It should be dependent on how you feel when you're around them. And I love again, we're talking about love languages, but I love sending people that I truly appreciate. If they're killing it, I'll send them, I use Sugar Wish, and it's a quick little gift that you can give them, like a box of cookies or something, and just say, hey, I'm thinking of you. I think you're awesome. Like, this is great. Or calling them up when something cool happens in their life, or calling them up and just to check in to say, tell me what's going on. I haven't talked to you in like 3 months. And like, that's it. You don't have to do anything crazy, insane to make these relationships. You just got to be a good person. And sometimes it's different for other people. But yeah, that's kind of really, really where I'm going with that.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And then how do you feel the future of networking is going? You know, we already talked a little bit about digital. Mm-hmm. You know, we already do a lot of face-to-face. How do you feel? Like, do you feel like the virtual reality is going to be the next stage?
Get out of here with that. No, we're not in a episode of
Black Mirror.
Thank you. No, so scary. I think that there is, I mean, COVID, man. COVID, I networked a lot in COVID, and it was great because I was able to meet more quality over quantity, which was nice. But I'm working from home. I can network from home. And the most alive I've felt in the last 2 years is when I got that co-working space, just because it got me out of my own zone and it allowed me to take the break. And now I've made friends that are there and now I can collaborate. My brain needs to ideate, because I will sit down and I'll work for 12 hours and not give myself a break.
Guilty.
Yeah, right.
I do that all the time. I hyper focus all the time, and Todd will be like, Naomi, but I'll be so focused on that, and I'll be like, wait, it's already like 5 o'clock. Like,
yeah, for sure. And like, you're like, where'd my life go? Like, I shouldn't be working this much. And so, I think that there's I'm struggling to answer this just because the future of networking is solely dependent. Networking is not a one size fits all kind of thing. It is a personal activity, and how you network, there's no wrong way to do it. You just have to do it. An activity is an activity. It's not just going to an event. It's like, okay, maybe instead of going to these four events, I'll go to this one big conference and have a plan. Or I will, you know, this month is going to be dead. Let me put together a social media strategy. I want to meet 5 people this month that interest me, that get me to think differently. And the future of networking is really what you make of it, but it can't be dependent on what you get out of it. It's dependent on how you make a relationship thrive in hopes that it becomes something greater. And your ability to maintain those relationships is solely on you. And sometimes they drift off. But I'm seeing women I haven't seen in years tomorrow, and they all reached out and said, we can't wait to see you. And it was like nothing had changed. And should I have been more attentive, you know, over the course of the last 5 years? Probably. And that's on me. but I met with kindness tomorrow, and that's completely to do with them. So I did something right for them to still feel the same energy about me as I do them, even years later. So how you follow up and how you network is solely dependent on your own ability and activity.
That's awesome.
But the future of it is like this virtual stuff. If it works, go ahead. You know, people find people to date on, you know, what is it? Not Discord.
They got Bumble and...
No, more of like the video games. Like Twitch. I don't know. I'm making up words.
Like the Fortnites and yeah. all those other different
people
types
of people anywhere. So if there's an environment that is similar to the things, and there's a commonality there, then go to it. I make candles now because I'm a grandma hobby. And let me tell you, I give these candles out just to people I like, and it is the best way to network. They're like, is this a flower on top of it? I'm like, it's a mold. I learned how to mold. And I can't tell you how many people come up. They're like, I really like my candle.
This is great, actually.
It's great. They're like, you should sell these. I'm like, nope, these are to give out. I got adult money and I got adult scents, so it's... Smells like a hotel in your office. You're welcome.
I love it. I love it. Anyway, did you have any questions?
Just one thing. We talked about introverts earlier and everything and stuff like that. What would you say would be a good technique that people can try to like practice for when they go out networking if they're an introvert?
Bring your extroverted friend.
Bring your extrovert.
Yep.
Todd is my extroverted friend.
Yeah. I mean, or go and with the intention to learn something. Whether it's because a lot of introverts say the one-on-one is the most important. If you're in a big environment, and because it's overstimulating, even for me, like a 1,500 person conference, no, thank you, you know, and it can be a lot. But if you go with I'm going to walk out with one meeting, I'm going to walk out feeling like I learned something. I'm going to walk out with like whatever your micro goals are, your achievable goals are, hit those first, and then everything else is gravy. So if you figure out when you're in that space, what is actually the issue for me? Is it the amount of people? Is it maybe it's hard for me to connect with somebody on at this table? Is it should I start the conversation? Should I not? Like test it out. Because once you figure out what you don't want to do, then you'll be able to say, okay, I'm going to lean into everything I can do. And that ends up building out a better cadence of how you network in those kind of environments. Hopefully that helps.
Yeah.
Awesome. I love it.
Thanks, man.
And what is next for the networking concierge?
I'm sleepy. I'm tired. magnesium after this. What's next? So I rolled out AshleyAssist.com is no longer available. It is now networkingconcierge.com. And the reason why I did that is because I built out a whole new website, similar offerings, but a lot more bandwidth for me to be able to manage. And so that way, when we do, one of my service offerings is the white glove service, which means a networking concierge will go on site with you and your team to network on your behalf. And so now I can outsource that to somebody that I train. So that way you can hire your own networking concierge. It's not just me. But I own the trademark, so thank you. I am registered.
Hey, there you go.
So I can train individual networking concierges to attend. I'm still training teams. I'm still, you know, doing audits and things like that. But that is the big push. So the website hasn't been announced yet, which is exciting. So this will be the first time I say it. And that'll be pushed out in the next week.
Awesome. Well, we will definitely put her website, her email. If you all want to get... in our description, so if you want to get in contact and learn more about what a networking concierge is and such, any social media handles you want to share?
Sure. It's networking_concierge. I just changed that on Instagram. And then it's networkingconcierge.com, ashley@ashleyassist.com. You can still reach out to me there. But honestly, I'm really good in the DMs on LinkedIn. So Ashley Owens-networkingconcierge, you'll find me there.
Awesome. That's fantastic. Well, thank you all so much. I'm Todd Odatson. We are here at 23 Journeys, a network for creatives. Make sure you visit our website, 23journeycreatives.com, for more information. If you'd like to connect with us or more about our show and connect with some of our guests, too. So, again, I'm Todd Odatson with Naomi Datson. Thank you for joining us today, Ashley.
Thank you for having me.
And you all have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Good night.